Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving-Shank, and Joan Adams and I host this show. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Our guest this evening is Erin Mangle of Love Revolution, or I should say Love-Illusion. It's probably quite the revolution when you think about it. And I just read on one of Erin's blog postings that he and his friend Justin intend to begin a very disciplined campaign, to use his words, of daily love, exercise, and journaling. And he wrote that on October the 27th, and we can see how well they are doing with this wonderful exercise. But before we go too much further, here is Joan Adams.
Hello,
Joan.
Kate. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Fine. Journaling sounds interesting, huh?
Yes.
That'll
be sounds
great.
Like, actually, we could get some great tips on a discipline campaign. I love that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, I do too, discipline, and I like journaling, period.
Discipline is a dirty word in certain circles, but certainly we like that word. So let me just bring on whom I think here is Justin, who I think is Erin, excuse me. Hello, Erin, I hope. Is that you? You might need to press 1, and if that's not you, I'll go on to this next call here. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi,
hello.
How are you? Hello.
I'm good. This is Erin.
Hi, Erin. Nice to hear your voice.
You too, and thank you for the kind introduction. I appreciate it.
Great. The Love Illusion. That is so cool. And Joan Adams is here too. Joan, this is Erin.
Hi, Erin. Welcome.
How are you? Thank you so
Great.
Much. It's very nice to meet you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Erin, are you on Skype?
Yes, I am.
I just want to tell you what we learned just the other week, and that is that it could give out on you in 45 minutes.
Okay.
So what you could do is just hang up and call back before the 45-minute mark. Yeah, okay.
That
so,
sounds good. And I also have a landline handy as a plan B as well. So I've definitely considered that as well. I've definitely experienced that actually during interviews for the Love-Illusion, as a matter of fact. So I think the energy can get a little crazy sometimes. So I don't know if it's the energy or the 45-minute cutoff, but it's one of the two.
Or both.
Yeah, or both.
So I really would love to know what brought you to this road that you're on. It's a very beautiful thing to be doing for the planet and for yourselves, for the planet and for everybody who are in your life.
Yes, yes. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, and I'm very glad that you created this space and creating an opportunity for me to a vacuum for these bills, because to be honest, when I'm interviewing people a lot, I don't always get to share my ideas, although I very often do. But to start off, I just to give you a little bit about my background, I was actually born in Auckland, New Zealand. My mom was in the Foreign Service working at the United States Embassy in Auckland, New Zealand, and that's where I was born. And so I was a U.S. birth abroad. And so that led to, early on in my life, a very rich cultural experience, because we lived in countries like Pakistan, Thailand, and the Philippines. I lived abroad up until it was I finished seventh grade in the Philippines, and then I came back to Maryland for eighth grade. Now, what happened to me, and now that it's been many years, I can very loosely explain to you what happened. But coming abroad from a rich cultural experience with lots of different languages and cultures and traditions and histories, and then I came to the U.S., where there was something very interesting happening with culture. At my age group, eighth graders, and I was in a private school, I experienced something crazy. There didn't seem to be any kind of variety or international type, common ground. It just seemed like something different was going on with the culture. And during that time, I started looking more into MTV, and being an adolescent, I was trying to figure things out. And so, to be honest, it was a great culture shock. And that planted a seed in my mind for what's going on here. And it was like I had been gone. And while I had been gone, things had been getting really crazy. So then I went to high school, which was in the same area of Maryland, Silver Spring, Maryland, Our Lady of Good Counsel High School. And I experienced an upgrade of what I experienced in eighth grade, where it seemed like I experienced a lot of cliques and the concept of people kind of forming their own social groups and deriving a lot of benefit from their social groups. So in high school, those groups developed further. What I found interesting was it was like some of those groups didn't have, it was like some of the people that were popular in eighth grade didn't seem to make it into the next level, which was high school. And I just remember noticing, like some people had sort of fallen out of their popularity status. Others had increased it greatly. And so I went through high school just feeling like it was a big world of everyone trying to get each other's approval and everyone trying to just seek, it's just approval seeking and impressing everyone and literally deriving your life purpose and your self-actualization from those people, from those actions. So again, I felt, a little bit isolated. At the times I didn't make friends. I'm not saying it was a bad experience, but I would say that I did feel that. Then I came to NC State. And for me, the NC State was a little bit of breaking out of that because, yeah, there's the cliques still exist, and those cliques do upgrade and make their own new formations, but people like me are able to expand a lot more. So I went to NC State University in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is where I am right now. And North Carolina, for whatever reason, just called to me. I don't know what it was, but North Carolina called to me. And it made me, when we visited, it was like a beautiful, like, spring day, blue sky, perfect, crisp temperature. I was with my parents. I would just remember thinking, wow, I love this place. It's amazing. So came to NC State. Now, while at NC State, I'm just kind of skipping over a few different things. I saw the different lifestyles and, culture. But what I really noticed was a friend had lent me a book called The Magic of Thinking Big by Dr. David Schwartz. And I realized that, wow, you just changed your thinking and you can become successful. Like, because the book talked about walking, you were trying to go somewhere, you had somewhere to be. And I mean, again, these were just like training wheels for my eventual spiritual development. But it started out with self-help. It started out with these self-help books. I got so interested because I thought, this is crazy. You can read a book and you can apply these ideas from this book and then you can have extraordinary changes in your life. I just thought, I've never even thought of doing that. I mean, because school kind of teaches you to hate reading books and not really to trust the information. So so what ended up happening was one day my friends and I discovered The Secret, and that introduced us to the Law of Attraction. Around this time, I was reading self-help books. Then we went to a Mind-Body-Spirit Expo here in Raleigh, and I tend to be a very open-minded person, so I received everything that day. And I don't mean everything like all the insights of the universe, but I mean the possibilities of the universe. I really learned what is out there, and I realized, wow, there's so much more than I thought that's actually out there. And wow, the world actually isn't boring and crappy and rigid and bureaucratic, which I was starting to think it was, And all of a sudden, more and more material and books and websites and people came into my life. I had some friends that were in the raw Buddhist movement. It was through Meetup, if you're familiar with meetup.com, great resource for people that are in our kind of movements. And I just started networking, and I just started getting my name out there, and I just started. I wouldn't say I was really that smart at all. In fact, I was very naive and dumb in some ways, but I liked the fact that I was that because I was able to receive everything. And now that I'm looking back on it, you know, I'm able to like discern and just basically like analyze and without really like destroying the information, if that makes any sense. And that took me a little while. That's what I feel like I've been coming out of. I've been coming out of that period of accepting everything. And it's just kind of converged with love and Justin introducing me to the idea of the Year of Love, which is what the Lovolution started out as. It was simply an image that came to him in a dream, and he wrote it down on a napkin, and then he created a logo, and we created the Year of Love, and 2008, it was February 2008 when that came to him. We said, look, 2008, the Year of Love, and we just started collecting affirmations and meditations and exercises and different material from books that we could find and just started sending it out in a love letter, which was our newsletter we would send out, you know, weekly or biweekly, depending. Mm-hmm. And then that has pretty much evolved into the Lovolution, and that's basically just our evolution of ourselves, our minds, and I would even say our, you know, spirit to some degree. We've basically, you know, created our own little journey. I like to call it like a choose your own adventure life, and that's really what life is, in my opinion. And so I'm just, you know, learning to embrace that more and more every day, and here I am talking to you, and I mean, I've skipped over a lot, but feel free to, if anything sounded interesting, I can certainly elaborate on anything that sounded interesting.
So when exactly did you start your Year of Love?
It was February of 2008, and that's when Justin brought me the idea. And again, we were just, you know, learning ourselves, and we still are, but more so then, you know, we were just figuring things out and figuring ourselves out. And so, yeah, February 2008 was when that began.
Now, it sounds like you had a lot of spiritual awakenings as a result of this practice, you know, of what all this discovery and this process of opening up to love is probably one of the most profound things that people can do. And as you mentioned in your blog post, it's, you know, I just got the impression that you noticed that you might be forgetting to practice love, as we all do. And what would you recommend to all of us who really want to practice love every moment of every day? What would you recommend that we do to keep on task with it? As if it's a task. You know what I mean? It's not.
I know exactly what you mean, and that's a big challenge because we want to keep it fun, and I have experienced just the words you use, it becoming a task. And I think there's a definite way to do that. One of the things that I do is this is nothing fancy, but I created a PowerPoint presentation, and I pick certain images, and I pick certain affirmations, and I basically look at that every morning. And Justin also has something similar. We call it like a mind movie, which I think there's a guy who actually has a whole program around that as a service. We're real simple. I'm actually getting ready to turn that into an actual video that has motion, and that's the evolution of it. But this is something that, like, just for purposes of today, right at this moment, we can, you know, I start my day with that PowerPoint presentation with my love, you know, affirmations and images. Even better is I add music. I pick songs that just cause me to feel bliss. I mean, I don't know, you know, what your experience has been with music, but I want to explore music much more deeply because I'm able to combine this blissful experience of the music with the PowerPoint presentation, and I'm able to really just, to be honest, sometimes I don't always feel it though. You know, don't I want anyone to think that it's like perfect every time, you're amazing. Like, if you're not feeling like, you know, super ecstatic bliss all day, every day, that doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It just means that, you know, we just need to like examine it more and maybe like go a little deeper and just kind of analyze our reality. That's what I like to do. So I start out every morning with that routine, and then a good way, sort of like I call this like maintenance as you're out and about, because, you know, Wayne Dyer talks about it's like you by the evening, you've forgotten what you learned in the morning. You know, it's kind of interesting. He says it much better than that, but that's the concept. But I like to use Ho'oponopono, which was written in a book, Zero Limits. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. The reason I like that is because it's something I can just, it's like a program that I can run in the background, and I can just say it all the time. And again, I keep going back to the book, and I don't always feel it. You know, I don't always feel like anything magical is happening, but I think that it is, you know, when it's all said and done, I feel like it was a good state of mind to think about, you know? And so I realized, well, okay, well, you know, maybe I don't need to feel anything. Maybe it's just good to be anchoring myself to love and thanks and, you know, I'm not quite sure about the I'm sorry, but, you know, I like the idea of it. You know, you're basically, like, humbling yourself. So that's ego management, you know. I would say it's more about ego management than how do you remember to love, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Dr. Leonard Lasko talks about creating a loving field. And especially, you know, when you're, I'm a nurse, so when I'm with my patients, I really practice this a lot. And it really, you don't just have to say anything. In fact, it's better if you don't say anything. And as that reminds me of what Dean Schrock said, too, about the less you talk, the lower your blood pressure is. Because when you start talking, your blood pressure skyrockets. I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, wow.
That was one little thing. Yeah. Doesn't that make makes a lot of sense, really? But the healing field, the loving field, is about just a series of visualizations and even he talked about when we did a lot of work with Leonard, he would talk about angel wings. And it's funny because when you're creating a loving field, all of a sudden you actually visualize angel wings coming out. Not necessarily.
Wow.
Yeah, you can actually feel them coming out of your own shoulders. And
cool.
It really works. I mean, it's not even something that you necessarily visualize. It's just something that spontaneously happens. So when you're with people that you're really trying to, who are in suffering, pain, and anguish, it really does help to do that exercise, which he talks about pretty, he talks about that in Healing with Love.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take coursework with him, he expounds more on it.
Ah, I see. Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's...
I did not hear that.
Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I did not hear your last sentence. I totally missed your last sentence. I don't know. Can you hear me, Kate?
I can.
Okay. All right.
The loving field, the loving field that seems to me something that you can practice almost all the time, like you can Ho'oponopono.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it almost takes it a step beyond or above or just the next step because you're using your breath and you're using, you know, energy that comes down from the crown chakra into your heart, and then you're visualizing energy coming in from the earth, coming up through your legs to your heart, and you kind of mix up that energy in a clockwise, counterclockwise. From my perspective, and you know, from your perspective inside your body, it would be counterclockwise, and then you visualize that energy of love going out from your heart. And the thing that Leonard always talks about is the chakra at the heart is the most important chakra that we work with in the energy of love. So, you know, not the throat chakra or even the third eye chakra, because, you know, other disciplines use those more than anything else. But Leonard always worked with the heart chakra. And so we learned to just use that most of all. And you know, there's just something about that. You need to open your heart. We have such incredible heart disease in our society. And a lot of sick hearts. People are brokenhearted. People are depressed and alienated from each other. And I think, you know, Ho'oponopono and just visualizing love and doing things that remind you all the time of what love means to you can even prevent these sorts of diseases that plague our society.
Yeah. Well, Kate, you just reminded me of a meditation I actually just developed this past couple weeks, and it's nothing fancy, but I've had some issues, you know, coming up with images, and when I recently started a media marketing company with a friend, and he's a videographer, and I'm more of a copywriter. So see, I was very worried. Like that's why I think books got me so excited, because I love words. But when we started combining forces, I began thinking more in images. So during my morning routine, sometimes I'll close my eyes when I'm really feeling a good part of the song that just gets you to a really, really out there place. I actually imagine myself like outside Earth on a like magic carpet or something, just standing there. And like a lot of the music I listen to has like a guitar in it. And so I imagine myself holding the guitar and there's like music coming out of it, and I'm really like vibing with that. So I imagine like almost like the Ghostbusters, the stream that comes out of their like little weapons. I imagine that coming out of the the guitar where I'm standing, and it like goes and surrounds Earth, and it like, and I sometimes will envision black spots, splotches on Earth that are sort of represent things you're talking about, like depression and all these different like problems that people are facing. And so I imagine that getting healed, and sometimes I'll even like see/create/ I don't know, it just appears. I'll have other like entities. I don't necessarily envision them like in a very detailed way, but I definitely have other entities present that are basically like joining in with the healing. So it's kind of a cool little picture to create for myself. And like I said, you know, a lot of this stuff, really getting into it, like that kind of stuff, has been something that only recently I've really begun to embrace deeply. You know, I think there was always a part of me that thought it was a little weird or maybe not necessarily like effective. But again, I think that's what the learning has been to support. That's what the learning has been to support. The learning has supported my ability to do things like that, and I basically like learning and practicing and learning from people like you and many others so that we can make sense of it and create, you know, activities and bring information together that we can use all day, every day, until we're all waving at each other saying, oh, man, I was just saying Ho'oponopono when I saw you. Oh, really? Me too. Oh, that's cool. You know, I want to have crazy stuff like that happening. So right now we're just laying the groundwork, and I think we're going to all be there very soon, if not already.
Yeah, you used that term love media one time recently. Which I thought was so very interesting. What a great term for what Joan and I strive to do, and you know, many, and what you do, what you're doing, and it's almost like we're being brought together because of
the exactly energy. And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joan.
Yeah, I'm just agreeing with you. Absolutely, we are all being drawn together. There's no question in my mind about that.
And
exactly.
I noticed that in everyday life, it's kind of hard. You know, we're sort of if you don't go to work, or when I do go to work, I only go to work 3 days a week, so that when I'm not at work, I really don't go out very much. So here we are on the internet, and we are finding like-minded souls here with each other, which is just a beautiful thing. And we have to keep it positive, you know. We just have to keep it positive, no matter what. I mean,
well,
because it's,
you know,
because it is positive. That's why.
Exactly. And just to, you know, if I could share a little bit of, I'm going to be writing a blog article about my vision of love media, and so it's kind of cool that we're talking about it right now. But basically, what it is I've been thinking about it. Like, what are we really doing here? Well, you're teaching people what love is. You're teaching people about these possibilities, these secret doors, if you will, that really aren't that secret, but they seem secret. And you're teaching people about these secret doors. You're giving them the keys that can unlock the doors. You're encouraging people to make this a lifestyle. We're creating a culture. We're creating vibrations. that are positive and healing and nourishing. And so Love Media is really about healing and learning and expanding and exploring. And like you said, it does have that positive spin on it. The media now, the way it's been, is it's been very, I think it feeds our shadow. And for a while, I you know, was like, oh, you know, I don't like all this negativity. And now I learn that the negativity is just unfinished business that needs to be healed. So when I see stuff like that, that's when the Ho'oponopono comes out. So I think what we're looking at here is creating Love Media that can be broadcast where people who, in the same way that we've passively been manipulated and deceived and programmed through all this information and media just presented around us all day, every day, my hope is that the Love Media, just by being around people, just by it like getting sprinkled in their consciousness, will create extraordinary, miraculous healing and healing, nurturing, nourishing of people's being, improvement of their lives, whether it's their cellular biology or it's their actual like social life or it's their fulfillment in whatever it is that they're working on or doing. And so it really comes down to we are creating those vibes in the air. And I don't even care about taking credit for them because I just as well bring someone who's 10 times as smart as me to a million people and be the guy that made that happen. You know, it's not even about necessarily me being the message bringer, although as a Gemini, I think I am. But it's really about us just creating that those airwaves out there that everyone can benefit from.
Absolutely, because it transforms as the airwaves transform, and they go very far.
Yeah,
it's very strange. I just got right here on my iPhone. This thing just flashed up, and I think it. I just want to refer to the deaths that took place out in Sedona, New Mexico, because this thing just flashed up, and I think I have to say something about it. You know, the secret star, James Arthur Ray, had, I think, gotten a little bit too full of himself. You know the story, of course, right?
I don't, actually.
About October the 8th, you know James Arthur Ray in The Secret?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. And I think he just got, his ego took over him, and he was acting like God, and people were flocking to him, looking outside of themselves for answers. It's almost like he became a cult figure, and he took these people into a sweat lodge, and after 3 days of not eating or drinking, so it was a vision quest, and the vision quest, I think, is generally like that, you know, where people are not eating or drinking, and then they get into a very altered state, and then they went into the sweat lodge, which was far too packed, and about three people died. A fourth person committed suicide, and 20 or more people were taken to the hospital, and they were severely dehydrated. So this is, you know, this is not like how the American Indians conduct that kind of vision quest. A vision quest and a sweat lodge is, the whole thing is going back into the womb of the mother, which is very safe. And then to top things off, Arthur Ray charged about $10,000 apiece for these people to do this, which I heard an American Indian say. I just thought it was so fascinating. That to go in back into the womb of the mother and pay $10,000 is blasphemy, you know, from the American Indian viewpoint, and probably from, she even said it was prostitution. So,
wow.
And this woman is very, very humble. She wasn't accusatory. She wasn't lashing out at the guy. But basically, he is in deep doo-doo, as you can just imagine.
Wow.
He just he took off with a pure message from the beginning, and it became distorted. He became completely obsessed by money and greed.
Wow.
And I think it's a lesson for
yeah.
all of
yeah.
us, for all of us. And I don't mean to be at all critical or judgmental, because that is the first thing that you feel like being in that situation, because, oh my God, how could this happen? What an idiot, you know, kind of thing. But
yeah.
in reality, you know, you were just talking earlier about having the secret be sort of your entry point into this,
exactly.
this path that you're on. So, and I wouldn't have brought it up except it kept flashing here on my iPhone. I have
oh.
that happen. Don't I have that happen?
Absolutely, and it's spooky. It is really spooky.
It is
but
very spooky.
I trust
yeah.
that iPhone of yours. But I think it has to come up to be discussed, because anybody listening to the show is going to immediately have that question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because that is what's going on now. I think, again, and you and I have said this too, that as we take these spiritual walks or experiences or whatever, I think it's real good to have a friend with you that you trust, that can
yeah.
say to you, hey, this doesn't sound just right, let's get out of here.
Yep.
You know, because if one of you is not discerning it correctly, the other might. I just think we have to be careful. I don't think this is something that we can just go blindly out there and follow whatever guru. I think
listen,
there's a danger in that.
I think we also, Joan, have to realize that we need to tell each other when we're going off course.
Yeah.
You know, when we are becoming yeah. absolutely idiotic.
And listen to it.
And listen to the people who are telling you, as opposed to cutting them off.
Right.
We had another experience just yesterday, which had to do with this sort of thing, with some sort of higher up guru in the thought movement who is doing something very stupid, and everybody and some of his friends were telling him, and he cut them off completely. And he cut them
wow.
off of Twitter, he cut them off of Facebook, and he was not open to listening to people who had his best interest in mind. And boy, talk about alienating yourself from truth.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the danger.
Yeah, and Joan, I think you're absolutely right. I want to just highlight what you just said. Is so true, I can't describe it, about having a friend. I would actually even go as far to say a group that
mm-hmm.
you can deliberate, almost like a, you know, board of directors, informally speaking, of course, meaning you get together and talk about different ideas. And it's so important now, because these are the kind of things that are going to be lapped up by the media, by the, you know, government PR movement. They're going to use this as ammunition against the secret. And I mean, again, it's not a big deal that they're doing that, because they're the people that are already doubting it, that are on the fence. You know, those people, like, there's always going to be things that the media and government are going to look for to use to discredit the movement. But you're exactly what you said. We need those friends around us to help us to realize, well, this is true, but that might not have been so true. And the discerning thing you're talking about, even though we have our own ideas, I have definitely found that my discerning is much more complete when I have other people to deliberate with and discuss. And you're absolutely right. It can get very uncomfortable when you don't always agree with people. But I would rather have that than what happened right there. So I definitely see it as a lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would rather have people tell me. And even if I don't want to listen, that's my ego rising up. You know what Marianne Williamson says, you know, your ego responds first, and then you have to wait for that to pass. But
right.
sometimes the ego gets too defined and too arrogant and too crazy. I would really want, you know, people to tell me if I'm really off base. That's all I can say. And especially the caliber of people that we are surrounding ourselves with, if somebody tells me that, I would listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. We trust each other, you know, where it's love. It is love. That is actually, and you know, that it's funny when you said about, you know, we need to keep things positive. It's funny how you said we need to keep things positive, and then that story that isn't necessarily so positive came together, but we're still keeping it positive, and we're keeping it positive by understanding that maybe not always feeling positive, meaning when you have a little bit of a disagreement of thoughts, like you said, that's actually kind of like defining the ego, meaning your ego shows itself, and you're like, oh, I recognize you by feeling mad. I'm understanding that you're here, and then you're able to just grow every time that happens instead of cut people off. And I can tell you absolutely, with absolute honesty, that I have definitely felt the tendency or the feeling like, oh man, I should just like not listen to that person. They're ruining my energy. That's how you'll rationalize it in your head. You'll be like, this person's ruining my energy, but they're actually not. They're actually growing your energy by making you feel that grief, agitation, you know?
That's so true. Isn't that what Wayne Dyer, that's how I first learned that everybody who, the people that make it kind of difficult for you are your greatest teachers.
Right. And
love,
I mean, that's
that.
Within reason, of course. Yeah, and it's within reason. I mean, you know, sometimes there's people that have had to go through some terrible things, and I am amazed at their ability to open their hearts to people that have victimized them. You know, I was more referring to, you know, the friends in our group, but it does apply to everything you're saying, so... Yeah,
it does. and don't forget, it's something I learned.
I lost you.
Yeah, did we lose her?
I think we did. I think we lost Miss Kate.
Well, Joan, I guess it's just you and I.
That's right.
But yeah, but your idea. I mean, I just can't. I know I'm repeating it over and over, but it's just so that's such good wise advice because you know, again, to be honest, I experienced a lot of these things on my own in isolation, and that's actually how the media itself actually works. They get you isolated. They get you thinking about stuff on your own, and we're able to get more clear when we have other people that can learn with us.
Right.
So,
and if we're going. Since I do believe we're walking through a spiritual revolution, we do need some guidelines. We do need things to teach ourselves along the way and say, hey, you know, be sure you surround yourself with people and keep yourself open to folks' opinions and that you respect and that kind of thing. I mean, I think we need some guidance as we walk through the revolution. And maybe we hadn't even thought about doing that yet. And so that's why we're getting some messages about that right now.
Exactly. Because there's so many, you know, I don't want to call them like traps, but there's just these little pitfalls, you know, and, you know, it's just nice to avoid them rather than get involved and fall in them. And if you do fall in them, for God's sakes, please tell somebody so you can pass along the lesson. So anything that I've done, any amount of information that I've, I would say my weakness is I'm too gullible sometimes. And that's why I'm such a big fan of what you're talking about, because in order to, I do tend to be on the gullible side, but that's what allows me to take a lot of information in. I don't put up blocks and shields and boundaries, but I discern it later, and I more like take away the junk later.
Mm-hmm.
And that works well for me, so.
I'm back.
Hello. We always wondered what we would do if that happened, and now we know.
Yeah, just keep going.
That's right, we did. But yes, what was saying, I don't know if you could hear us, but that if we're going to walk through this spiritual revolution that we all believe is happening at this point in life, that we're going to need some guidelines and some things to keep reminding each other of. I mean, I just think that's going to be a necessary thing for all of us.
And that would be something this James Arthur Ray thing and some other things that we've been exposed to would be a wonderful teaching and guidelines. I think guidelines would be a good thing to explore and to meditate on with this whole consciousness expanding love-volution movement that is taking place right now.
And come up with our own, you know, this is going to be the way I'm going to do this. Our own little rules, if you will. I don't like that word, but this will be how I'm going to do this. And if so-and-so happens, then my alarms are going to go off and I'm going to pay
attention. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And to be honest, it's a matter of, like, you know, you could also call it best practices, and whichever practices we choose to utilize on a daily basis, what this is really about is everybody creating their own personal Lovolution within themselves. Like, a Lovolution could be when I hang up and I go look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, man, that was so fun, and I loved sharing with people, and, you know, just look at myself and, like, be caring or loving to myself or say some kind word. That is a personal Lovolution. No one's there. It's just me and myself, mm-hmm. and whoever. And if there, maybe there's some, you know, maybe there's some ETs around, who knows. But you know what I mean. It's just me, pretty much. And I think that, you know, when we can just start with that, and then, like we're doing now, combine our ideas. And I just, to be honest, I'm feeling such a good flow with what we're talking about here, that this is exactly what people can do for themselves in a conversation. You could be in line, you could be talking to somebody, and you guys have a great conversation. You just moved the Lovolution forward a little bit more. So everyone is a part of it, you know, because a lot of the time I felt like, you know, I wanted to start something, but then, like, when things get started, you know, and it gets a lot of people involved, then you kind of feel like a number. And I don't want anyone to feel like a number that just comes in. I want them to feel like they are, like, the CEO, the co-founder of their own personal Lovolution in their life. And I would like to have them report back, and I would love to hear what their experience was, because really we're pretty much information gatherers at this point.
Yeah.
And we're sending it to people. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just thought of something. You know, we had Leonard Lasko on and Dean Schrock, and a lot of the things, their emphasis seems to be very scientific. And as you said, which is so cool, that we all, and that would be their worldview on love, even though they have a more, that scientific way that they explain things is the way they feel they have to come across the world. But on the other hand, they do so much more with love behind the scenes. But they think that they're having to explain love to the world, they get a little scientific. But here, you know, we have a different vantage point, what we're discussing here about love. It seems like it's more experiential. It's more how we see it and how we have lived it. And
we're basically having a boardroom discussion for our stakeholders, the universe, or shareholders, you know, and the people of this planet and the rest of the universe. And we're discussing some very important, you know, decisions that we're all going to have to put in our vote on, so to speak, and I use that term loosely. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we are, like, that's kind of what I'm feeling from us. I feel like it's more of a behind-the-scenes boardroom, like, the Lovolutionaries gathering together, you know, putting some serious deals and business together. And I mean, like, love business, like, for everyone, really. It's more about, you know, the deal is between humanity and love, and we're trying to be the brokers, you know?
Yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. Yes. And that our boardroom and our brokers are of the unseen world, really. You know,
we're talking about. We're like extensions of them.
Yeah, and we're really asking for help for not ourselves necessarily, but for all of us, you know, because, yeah, there's something much more going on than meets the eye, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's very thrilling, really, and I'm not saying I want to figure it all out, but I really enjoy exploring certain bits and pieces of it, you know, and just, because really I think I can safely say that we will never figure out 100% of it perfectly, particularly in this form we're in now, I like what's most relevant and what's most fun and enjoyable and helpful, you know, if we can combine, you know, what's effective and what happens to be fun and, you know, do something different while we're at it and get a new experience. So.
Yeah. Transform it. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the clock. And this is the fastest hour of the week. You know, this is the absolute fastest hour of the week. Do talk to us, if you will, a little bit about your journaling exercise. We're both serious journalers here.
Yeah.
Well, I did not actually do the particular journaling exercise. As I said, it's kind of weird because I am a wordsmith and I do like words. But what my experience was from we created a product called the Love Experience, and basically from that I did do a little bit of an experience where I would write down an affirmation, and then you could potentially write down like any ideas that come to you or anything that, you know, I've actually come to the realization that it can be sort of like a Q&A kind of session where you can promote or produce a question or a concept, and then you can just allow it to flow. I have a friend who actually he helps people write books, and he is a big fan of this book, Conversations with God. And he literally, you know, he is an initiation in a way, because you're sitting there and you're basically doing just that, having a conversation with God. And like I said, you know, I haven't. It sounds to me like, to be honest, I should be asking you guys what you do, because I think I would learn a lot more. But like I said, you know, I tend to keep things pretty quick and to the point. Like, I'll write down an affirmation. I might write down some ideas that have come to me, like some ideas for articles or some things I should like read. And then I watch the Love Media, and maybe I'll like light some incense or something to get also. Then there's the olfactory sense, you know, and that gets you, that crosses the brain barrier. So I'm really about integrating the senses. And when I do that, it, for me, it's more effective and meaningful. And like I said, this is kind of a paradox, considering I consider myself, you know, having abilities with wordsmithing and crafting words and writing. But like I said, you know, I don't always gravitate towards like a lot of extended writing, even though I do the blogs and write ebooks and stuff like that. So,
how many blogs do you
have? I don't know if that answers your question. Right now, it's the Lovolution. I have another blog with another business I'm working with. That's junk removal, college junk, uh-huh. Song junk. So that's been sort of fun to have that. And then we're actually going to start another blog that's going to be through the business I mentioned earlier, Upload Productions, that's conscious media and media marketing. And that's going to be more love in business, the conscious capitalism movement. What does that really mean? What are the different definitions of that? Because a lot of people say different things. So love is very focused on, well, obviously love, but love in the sense of like, we're taking love seriously. We love love. We want to teach people about love, because when love gets in people's minds, there's going to be very unique manifestations of love. So just an engineer's manifestation of love is going to be very different from a accountant's a manifestation of love, or a politician's manifestation of love, or a businessman or woman's manifestation of love. So there's a lot of there's just a lot of possibilities there, you know. So yeah, those are the two main areas where I'm putting content though right now.
Well, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You did get all those perspectives. That's a very good point.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I started this blog within the last week or so. That just makes me feel very good. And that's just a daily angel blessing. And
oh, wow.
Actually, it's a daily angel prayer, to be specific. And, well, Joan and I belong to the Squidoo community. And, and they, it's a long story, but what happens is after you've been around for a while, they appoint Squidoo angels. So I became a Squidoo angel, which just means that I kind of look over the site every day to make sure there isn't any pornography, just to make a long story short. But also, we bless lenses, you know, lenses that are really a web page. If you've made 50 to 100 web pages, there's a lot of good lenses out there. So as an angel, we can bless the angels. I mean, we can bless the lenses. But I decided to create a daily wood angel prayer. And to make a long story short, that is just writing those prayers. They're short and sweet. Make me feel really good.
But you're receiving those, Kate.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously something that you are receiving, because it pops it up it pops off the page.
Thank you.
They're short, but you know, there's no response to that except wow or that's beautiful. It's just you're receiving it. It's divine. You are receiving those prayers. And again, like the show and so many other things you and I walk through, it's like we don't know the reasons why, but there mm-hmm. is a reason you are writing those prayers, and they're perfectly lovely. It reminds me of somebody who receives music in the night. I have a friend who composes music, and he says he dreams it, you know.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. That it has that same feel to it.
Thank you.
Divinely inspired, yeah.
And to be honest with you, the reason I do it is just to make myself feel better.
Yeah. Well, you make a lot of other people feel better, too.
Yeah. That's the way it works sometimes, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, because, you know, I think all of us are, you know, I've given a lot of thought to what I'm doing, and it's kind of crazy, but sometimes I think, what did I do in a last life? Seriously, I probably don't even want to know. I'm putting a lot of love out there, and so this must be, you know, offsetting something. So it's just, I just kind of laugh about it to myself because I realize, you know, there's so much that's a part of us that we're connected to that we just don't realize that. That's why, you know, when I look at things on people on different sides of the coin, I like to actually find a way to transcend what my initial reaction to that person is, like what you were saying about James Ray, like it's easy to say, you idiot, what's wrong with you? Same with politicians or people that are doing all these, you know, corrupt or, you know, seemingly unethical things. And you realize that, yeah, they might be unethical, like according to our legal structure or our current ideology, but then you sort of realize these things are creating polarity. And this is a big thing that I've learned, like you wanted to talk about guidelines. I feel like everything negative in the world is here to create polarity. And it's like when, for example, like today, I was working and I have a storage unit and it's stuffed full of stuff right now. And we're setting up some deals with some consignment shops, but we basically got a point where we needed that space, but it was filled. And I just felt that like, oh man, you know, I don't want to have to like, you know, get rid of this thing because I don't have the space for it. If I had just created space for it, I would have been able to have that. Like, I don't want to have this problem ever again. So whenever we have problems, I like to look at it from my standpoint of how can I never have this problem again? Or if I have it, how can I make sure that I get the lesson right away so that the suffering can just be a quick thing that I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, it's kind of like someone twisting your arm and you're like, okay. Some people really let people yank that arm, but I personally do not like to have my arm yanked very much, so therefore I'm very fast acting, fast responding to the negativity, where I realize that it's doing nothing more than create polarity. So if we see negative things, we should be doing exactly what you just dictated, which is putting out more prayers and love and things like that, you know? So in a way, I know this is going to sound a little crazy, but in a way, those people that are creating that negative polarity are getting the credit from their divine plan because they're doing what they're supposed to do. And I've had trouble even considering that possibility. You mean people, it's their divine plan to do bad things to others? And it appears that that might actually be the case. To create that polarity, they may not know what they do, but the point is that we're still required, I mean, not required, but again, I think we're supposed to notice that and understand that. And in doing that, we, I think, actually create a redemption for them, the people that are creating the negative polarity. Because, I would imagine if that's actually true, it's probably incredibly taxing on their being and their, like, life in general to have to do those things, you know? So it's not like they have to do a lot of these things. So, you know, I'm still figuring that one out, but it's an interesting idea to consider.
Yeah, it is. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, you know
what
I like about it?
Either, but,
the way I like the reason I like that is because it takes it beyond, you know, the sphere of politics or the sphere of the everyday world, and it takes it much higher to a point where, you know, you can rise above it and try to figure it out from a higher place. Right? You know, not that there's any higher, lower, or whatever, but just as a way to try to explain it. That's why I like it. And
well, you know, I think there's no higher or lower, but I think there can be a in the controversy. You know, you can, like, you can join sort of this argument, if you will, or you take the former option you just offered, which was transcendence, which I think, in a way, it puts you beyond, and it's not like higher or lower, it's just you're beyond the argument, the controversy, the whatever is going on, the circus, the whatever it is, you know?
Yes.
So I think
that's
very, very good. Yeah, very true.
I do too. And it's there's so much to try to synthesize that you don't really want to, if you start, you know, putting it down on a base level with politics and all these things that people are fighting for and everything that everybody disagrees about, it's just so unimportant. And it needs to be transformed and so that everybody can understand the same language. When you start talking politics, people don't speak the same language. And then you alienate people. So I just don't like it anymore. Even though I have a strong political background, I just don't like it. I don't like what it does to people.
And how we have to think about others. Like, why do I have to think about conservatives a certain way or Democrats a certain way? Like, I don't like, as you said, having to, like, put a demographic, like, space in my brain where they're like, oh, they're like this and they're like this, and that's what we're trying to break out of. You know?
Yeah, it is. And as soon as you start getting involved with the polarity on that level, or, you know, with the duality of this political platform, that political platform, this political figure, that political figure being a Republican, a Democrat, it just really makes you feel ill. Makes me feel ill.
Yeah.
I would say. And I basically had enough of it.
Very good. I'm with you. And I mean, we're basically gonna, you know, send love to all parties. Do you hear that, parties?
Yeah.
All of you are getting it. It's for everyone.
Yeah. It is.
You know?
It's not just for some and not for others. I mean, that's what happens though when you get into that consciousness where it's us against them. It's you know, fight or die or whatever, you know, it's ridiculous. So
what's even more hypocritical is that they're all kind of working together. So again, it's like I said, you know, not to blame them, but it's part of that polarity. Like, they are working together, and they know that they're supposed to create this perceived opposition. And so that's why, you know, I play both sides. I'm a very understanding person to their to what they're doing, but I'm also saying, just because I'm willing to forgive you and just because I'm willing to love you does not mean I'm going to say, that's great, keep doing it. In fact, it probably means I'm going to start saying things to them in the right way, not just running at the mouth. I'm actually finding the right ways to communicate with people. And I think as long as we stay from the lens of love and learn from the James Ray case study, where when you come from ego, like, just seems like bad things happen. So, you know, as long as the ego is sort of like the editor, he'll edit the piece that the love did, like, oh, I don't know, I think you're being a little too nice there. Okay, cool, well, we can, you know, be a little meaner, that's fine, you know, just to make our point. But, you know, you see what I mean? It's just, it needs to be, I think, through the lens of love, the transcendent point that you were describing. And then everything can flow from that, and I think we can think very clearly from that perspective.
We have 60 seconds remaining on the program.
I knew that was going to happen to us.
I love it.
The plot does move.
This has been amazing. I just have to say, you know, this has been incredible. Both of you, great energy. Like, I feel so good right now. This is awesome.
Oh, wonderful.
I feel wonderful, too.
Appreciate you being here with us, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's been great. Like you said, show flow. Or this is the flow show.
Yeah, the show flow.
The show flowed, and we didn't really have to do much about it. That's really cool.
It flowed in the blink of an eye. It's like I drank water or something. Like
glass
of water.
It is. That's right. It is, just is what it is.
Don't forget to drink your water. That's very important.
Right.
I think I will. I'm kind of thirsty.
You know what? We would love to have you back on the show,
please.
Aaron. You're just a delight. You are just a delight. And I have enjoyed this talk.
And like I said, maybe I can return the favor as well. And you know, we can have you shine as you did just now even more. So, and you too, Joan. So,
cool.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
We're about to play the music of Klaus C.D. Jensen from Denmark, and his music is Music for Mother and Child. So thanks again, Aaron, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Much love to everyone.
Thank you.
Love you, Joan. Bye-bye.
Love you. But good night.